Welcome back to the second hour of Leading Edge Medicine. Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only.
Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with your host, Pete Talbot, along with Dr. Samara Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians, all while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you an opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here's your host of Leading Edge Medicine, Pete Talbot.
Hey, welcome. Hour number two. Hour number one was good. It started off with a political, well, it wasn't a rant. You rant. You do a good job ranting. Today, you did a really great job talking about the beauty of the 4th of July. This is a celebration of independence.
Yep.
Really cool.
Individual freedoms.
Individual freedoms.
Yeah. Yeah, we're not celebrating, you know, a hero or a church or a religion or a special holiday. This is the average American's holiday.
A true experiment.
Yep.
Boy, what a joy. Okay. Back to medicine.
Yeah, I had two more comments I wanted to make on this fellow's arthritic issues.
That's right.
You know, I talked to him about the importance of getting lean and especially abdominal leanness. The other thing is he sounds like he's a man of some mature years, over 50. And so I'd want to take a good look at his anabolic hormone load, the IGF-1, testosterone, dehydroepiandrosterone, pregnenolone, so on. These are the growth factors that allow him to grow new lean tissue. And lean tissue, muscle, produces what we refer to as myokines. Just as fat produces more than 80 different inflammatory, destructive enzymes, peptides, etc., working muscle produces more than 100 growth factors, anti-inflammatory factors, and healing products. So working muscle is very, very good. The less muscle you've got and the less frequently and intensely it is worked, the fewer of those growth factors you are producing. So the problem of getting older is there is a very natural decline in the factors that allow us to grow lean tissue. And that's one of the things we do at Longevity is restore those levels to that of a 25 to 30-year-old so that you're able to grow lean tissue, so you're able to produce the growth factors and the anti-inflammatory factors that are so important for preventing or repairing arthritic degenerative diseases. The other factor is because his joints hurt, and because his muscles are getting weak, both from inactivity and from endocrine decline, he's not producing the micro trauma on the joint surfaces that allow them to heal and repair. What we found is people that are sedentary have much greater rates of degeneration in their joints than people that are physically active. Now, there's a balance. You have to be physically active enough to provide some micro trauma, some little tiny injuries to those joints, but you don't want to be so active that you are destroying the joint. So there is a balance, but you do need physical activity. So resist that urge to sit quietly and not move because the joints hurt.
Oh, good point.
Use the joints as much as you can without undue pain. And then let us help you increase the endocrine and growth factors that'll shift your metabolism towards repair so you can start fixing those joints. That's all I wanted to add.
Excellent. Well, I'm real glad you brought that up because we often talk about the advantage, obviously, of comprehensive hormone replacement therapy.
Yes.
That's what we're talking about when you say a decline in the endocrine system.
Yeah.
That's your hormones that are declining.
Yeah, but it's not any one. You don't just throw testosterone at a man or estrogen at a woman. There's a widespread decline in the way our bodies are producing factors, and we need to measure them. We need to evaluate why and what's going on, and then we need to carefully and judiciously supplement them.
So trying to deal with a weight problem, an energy problem, without dealing with your basic endocrine system, your hormones, it's a lot easier to do when you deal with
You're swimming upstream.
That's right. Oh, my golly.
Yeah, because your body is trying to make you slower, weaker, fatter, so you will die and get out of the way and quit consuming resources that the next generations need. I mean, that's the way biology is designed. We are actually designed to start having our kids in our teens. That's why as teenagers we have such high urge for sex. Sex makes babies. Babies are the function. That's why we are made that way. We're designed to start having our kids in our teens. We are designed to stay strong and durable to protect our babies until they are teenagers. Once they are biologically capable of having children, from a simple biology standpoint, we've done our job. Our job then is to start getting slower, weaker, fatter, die, get out of the way, and quit consuming resources that next generation wants. The problem with that plan is we don't like it. And in the modern age, we don't have to cooperate with it. But if we don't do the sort of interventions that we do at longevity, what happens is we do continue getting slower and weaker and fatter, and our joints start to hurt, and our heart doesn't work well, and we get short of breath, and our kidney function is declining, and we are sliding downhill to a degree that our ancestors would never have imagined, because we protect ourselves from the world much better than we used to. It's not that we're healthier. We're just better protected. And so in a physical condition, in an immune system that has declined to a point that would have killed us in our 50s a few generations ago, we can now drag ourselves into our 70s and 80s and 90s. But drag becomes more and more appropriate as a description.
When they first came up with the Social Security system, the average age in America was?
Well, the average American lifespan was 56 years.
That's what I meant to say.
Yes.
Thank you.
And so they made the age at which you could collect Social Security 65. Because the average American would die in their late 50s. And they couldn't collect Social Security till your mid-60s, and so only about 6 or 7% of Americans were ever designed to collect Social Security. Now, almost everybody collects, and they collect for a decade or two.
Oh, yeah.
And that's why the system's in trouble. It's not because anybody up there is evil or wicked or plotting against us. It's because Americans don't die on schedule. Well, we have two choices, okay? We can work longer and pay into Social Security much longer than we are currently. You can put off the benefits. You know, if we were to set up the original plan so that most Americans would die before collecting, we'd have to make our Social Security age, you know, somewhere about 85 or so.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
because then most Americans would be dead before they could collect. We aren't going to do that. Right.
We don't have the stomach for it.
No, we don't.
Sure.
Well, our stomach is part of the problem, but yeah. But we do need to recognize that stopping work in our 60s is no longer tenable. If you're going to live to be 80 or 90 or like my plan's 100 plus, and I plan to still be out singing, dancing, and cavorting at 100.
It's the cavorting that bothers me.
Yeah, I know. The cavorting worries you, but doggone it, I enjoy my cavorts. So
the bottom line, folks, if you can develop and maintain your endocrine system, your hormonal system, like it was when you were in your 30s, for example, the odds of you being able to deal with the energy, your stamina, your mental acuity and keeping your weight in check, metabolism.
Look, I turn 73 next month in August.
That's right.
Okay, 73 next month.
That's right.
But for 23 years now, I have had the endocrine support of a 25-year-old. Okay, because for 23 years, every 3 months, we go in, we measure my blood, and we make the adjustments. So I keep all of my endocrine support at a range of a 25 to 30-year-old. The consequence of that is that even though I don't go to the gym these days because it's closed, and so I don't set aside average workout, I knock out 175 to 200 push-ups a day. Okay, I can bench press 220 pounds. I can do chin-ups. I can run for three and a half miles without being overly tired. You know, if I'm just walking, hell, I'll walk out 5, 6, 7 miles and think nothing of it. The reality is that I am functioning far better than the average 73-year-old man.
Oh, my golly. Yes.
That's not a special virtue on my part. There is nothing special about Dr. Mixon. The only thing special is that I have, for a long time now, maintained my endocrine support at that of a much younger man. Didn't make me young. I got white hair. Right? But if I exercise, I make muscle like a younger man. That muscle produces more than 100 different growth factors to help me to heal and repair. I go in periodically and I wipe out my senescent cells and lower my level of senescent cells down to that of a 25 or 30-year-old instead of letting it accumulate where it should be in my 70s. There are things you can do that will have a big impact on your life, but you're not going to get them done in a more traditional medical clinic.
Right.
You only get it done at a place like Longevity where we actively treat the aging process as though it were a disease. Because guess what? Even though the FDA does not consider aging a disease, they consider it a normal process. Aging kills 100% of the people who suffer from it. Anything that kills 100% of its victims should be addressed by doctors. That's just Dr. Mixon's medical philosophy.
Couldn't agree more. I'll never forget. This is about 12, 13 years ago. A very famous guy, TV personality, was talking about comprehensive hormone replacement therapy, and he didn't think it was fair and appropriate.
Yeah.
He agreed with it.
It was Bill O'Reilly. I saw that interview.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And I heard Bill say that because the guy was telling him about, you know, what could be done. He said, but that's not fair. Only the rich can afford it. And I said, and when did somebody teach you life was fair? And besides which, at Longevity, we are the least expensive clinic that does this sort of comprehensive therapy in the world. Nobody does it less expensive than us. Nobody does it cheaper than us and still does it well. So, you know, my whole goal has been to take this to as many people as I can possibly get. And that's why I buy this radio time every Saturday. I'm trying to spread the message. I want people to know there are things you can do about the aging process. And yes, we have to charge for it because I wasn't born a Rockefeller or a Kennedy. Okay. I can't pay for the privilege of providing your care. Okay? And my staff wants to be paid. Funny how that works. But we keep the cost as low as we practically can and still break even.
And actually, there are some clinics around the country, a few, that do it as well as we do. And in most cases, they charge like two, and in one case, I think three times what we charge.
Actually, the biggest one in the country charges nearly five times what we do.
That's right.
Yeah, 500% of our charge.
It's absolutely true. And so, again, this is coming back to why we do the free health analysis appointments, because that'll give you a couple of baby steps, but it'll give you some of the basic underlying problems that you need to address. You may only have one or two. You may have four or five. That's why you do the free health analysis appointment, because with that knowledge, with that information, then you can decide what you need to do and how to do it. So, again, if you would like one of those free health analysis appointments, you want the advantage of that what Jerry was just talking about, what our patients, the incredible advantage, grab an appointment. go to our website, lmclinic.com. That's lmclinic.com. And push on the button right there, I think, smack dab in the middle of the page to schedule your own appointment. It's so easy to do, it'll take you less than 3 minutes. lmclinic.com. You know, Jerry, Chris, who was just on the line talking about arthritis, and it kind of relates to what we're talking about, he called back in. Doesn't want to go back on the air, but he wanted you to know that he's 72 years old and that he's trying to build more muscle mass. That is one of his objectives.
Then he needs to come see us.
Then he needs to grab one of the free health analysis appointments.
Absolutely.
And see how, if you really want to do that and you want every advantage, oh my golly. Mm-hmm. This is what longevity does. I mean, this is why we're here. It's not magic potions. It's just science, and it's downright exciting. Yeah.
It is. It's the cutting edge science. And yes, we are sometimes way out in front. But we warn you when we're suggesting something that's way out in front.
And that reminds me, maybe we should be talking. In fact, I know darn well we're going to be talking about senescent cells and some of the things associated with that. It's pretty exciting.
Listen to that next segment. Although I don't know how many calls we got waiting, but if we get the time, I like to segue into, because I did comment that I wipe out much of my senescent load a couple of times a year. And let me explain why and what that is.
That makes really good sense. We'll deal with that after the break. So hang in. We've also got some calls. Again, I think the first one, I mentioned Julie from Snohomish. She said, well, what if people next to you aren't wearing their masks? She wants to know.
All right, we'll talk about that too.
Talk about that. We have a question about contact tracing, COVID-19, and children and the virus. So we've got a few virus questions that are popping up today. We'll be right back. And this is Leading Edge Medicine. Welcome back. I'm Pete Talbot. I've got Dr. Jerry Mixon with me in the studio today. And if you're a new listener, Dr. Mixon is the founder and chief medical officer of Longevity Medical Clinic. Started back in 1998. We've been on the air since 1999. So welcome to the show if you are brand new. Dr. Umat is not with us today. She's off with family. How dare she spend time with her family?
That's where I'm going to spend my afternoon and evening.
That's right. Me too. Okay. Let's talk about masks, because you had talked about masks earlier in the show.
Yes.
Let's go to Snohomish and talk to Julie. Julie, welcome to the show.
Hello, Julie.
Hi. Hello. Yes, my question, I appreciate all your information this morning, but my husband and I also had a question about if you're wearing one, we understand how far, how much protection you get, but what if the people around you in a social setting or even outside or inside refuse or don't believe in them and don't want to wear them, et cetera?
Well, if you're wearing one,
you get from wearing it,
you get pretty good protection. But again, it depends on the mask. You know, if you've got an N95 or a KN95, you're getting very good protection. You know, you may get droplets on your clothing and on your skin. So be sure to go wash your hands after you've been near them, especially if they're coughing. In fact, if they're coughing, move away quickly.
Yeah, leave the room. I'm not sticking around.
You know, but yeah, the masks are dual purpose. They help you to not infect others. They help the others to not infect you. So it's a two-way street. Obviously, best is if everybody is wearing their mask. You know, if they've got one, they're not spraying as much in the environment, and you've got one, you're not getting as much from the environment in your nose and mouth. So, you know, that two is better than one, but one is better than none. And just get as much distance as you politely can. You know, don't scream, unclean, unclean, and run for the hills. But, you know, back away and get a couple of feet between you. And then make sure you wash your exposed surfaces.
Thank you. And what about the political rhetoric we have heard about, I'm wearing it for your protection? It doesn't really help. I mean, at the beginning especially, we heard that comment over and over.
You know, that was something that really irritated me about our Surgeon General. Seems like a nice enough guy, but he was lying to us. You know, and the lie was so transparent. It was obvious to anybody that was thinking. He was saying, stop buying masks. Masks don't do any good at all. But we really need them for the doctors and the nurses and the technicians because it'll save their lives. And I'm sitting there thinking, what are you, an idiot? You think we're idiots? If the masks do no good, then the doctors and the nurses and the technicians don't need them. Right? The fact that they need them is proof that you honestly believe they do some good. The problem was, of course, we didn't have enough masks. We had not counted on a pandemic. We had not stored several billion masks in our storage. You know, we were supposed to have 90 million masks in our national depository at any given time, and we only had 12 million. Because what had happened was, back during the H1N1 flu pandemic, the Obama administration passed them out to cities and states and hospitals, and that was a good thing to do. But they never replenished the supply. They gave away 90% of what we had in storage, and they didn't buy any new ones. That was a mistake. Now, I'm not necessarily criticizing Obama and Biden, because guess what? Mr. Trump had 3 years to replenish them too, and he didn't do it either. So nobody replenished our national supply. So we were stuck. And you know, what he should have said is, yes, masks are good. Get any kind of mask you can. Any mask is better than no mask, but save the N95s for the medical personnel because they really need them. Right.
Honesty would have been
that's
helpful.
All I ask. You know, we know that mistakes have been made, and mistakes will be made. They're human beings just like me and you. So I don't mind mistakes. I get offended by lies that assume I'm an idiot.
So what do you say to people that say masks are dangerous for you because you're reabsorbing the carbon monoxide?
Well, again, a KN95, the one we pass out to our patients and their spouse, yes, please do not try to wear that mask while you exercise. Okay? It restricts blood flow. I'm sorry, it restricts airflow.
Right.
You will get hypoxic. It's designed for doctors and nurses that are standing quietly at a hospital bed. You know, and they're very effective at filtering viral particles, but, you know, they're not designed for exercise. If you're going to exercise, you need something that lets a lot more air through. And if you're like me, I do my morning and my afternoon and evening runs and walks out on the Cross Kirkland Trail. It is rare that I get within 6 or 8 or even 10 feet of another person. Most of the time, I'm 30, 40, 50 feet from anyone else. And when I do pass someone else at a 6 or 7 foot distance, we're in contact for a second because we're going in opposite directions as fast as we can. I don't wear a mask at all in those times, but I keep a mask in my back pocket. And if I'm going to the grocery store, I put my mask on before I enter the store, and I wear it until I am far enough away from everybody else that I can take it off again. That's all. Use good sense.
Julie, appreciate the call.
Thank you.
I guess you bet. You're
welcome. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Julie. Okay, we have, let's take another call. Let's go to Lacey and talk to Eileen. Eileen, welcome to Leading Edge Medicine.
Thank you so much for taking my call again.
You're welcome.
Now, okay. Dr. Mixon, I actually had heard you say a few weeks ago that there weren't enough contact tracers to contact all the positive tests, and they were focusing on hospitalized patients.
Yes. And hopefully that's changing.
It is, definitely. My son-in-law was tested on the 24th. This is after Father's Day, and we were at an outdoor barbecue at their house on the 21st. Uh-huh. And he is in a profession where he has to go to court, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And he was, his whole firm was tested on the 24th, and he came back positive on the 26th.
Okay.
And, of course, my husband and I then promptly went down on the 26th here and got tested and waited 5 days for our results. But that being said, on the 2nd of July, he got a call from a contact tracer.
Good.
And the house was full of hubbub because they had two toddlers. They have two toddlers. His wife has tested negative twice. And we don't know about the kids, so they're not testing them. But the contact tracer called back kindly on the 3rd and interviewed him and said that she was going to be, she's from the state, by the way, and she's going to be calling back every day until Tuesday the 7th. And if nobody else in the family develops symptoms, they'll be released for normal activity.
Yep.
Does that sound a little soon?
Yeah. Or? No, not really. Most people that are going to come down with symptoms will come down with symptoms within 5 or 6 days of getting infected. So if you were exposed, about a 75% chance within 5 days you'd have gotten sick. Okay. The reason we set 2 weeks is that virtually nobody gets sick after that long. It's usually about 3 to 5 days. Some people will go a week, or very few will go 10 days. If you've been sick in 2 weeks, you're not going to get sick from that particular exposure. Okay. And what this is telling us is he is one of the people that got sick or that got infected, but he is not shedding enough virus to infect other people. And that turns out to be very common. Interestingly, most of the people who get infected will not spread it to anyone else. And, you know, husbands and wives have pretty close contact, right? if he is positive and she didn't turn positive, that tells me he's just not shedding virus worth a hoot. That's a good thing, okay, which says you're pretty safe. Additionally, though, there are people that are what we refer to as super spreaders. They shed virus at a furious rate. They're the minority.
Wow.
There may be five or 10% of them, but they won't infect one person. They'll go out and infect 8 or 10 or 15 people. So we have the non-spreaders, you know, like your son, and then we've got the super spreaders. Most people are pretty much non-spreaders. They don't spread it very easy. And if they're going to spread to anybody, they spread it to their lover because that's the person they have the closest contact with before they knew they were sick. All right?
Yeah.
So if the spouse doesn't get sick, nobody's getting sick from that person. Okay. But then you'll get the super spreader, and they'll go to church, and they'll practice in the choir, and the whole darn choir comes down sick. It's just the way it is.
Well, the kids are almost 4 and 19 months, and they have been in daycare all during lockdown because my daughter also works in a judicial system in another county, but she's been working from home for 6 months. And so are they going to be testing the kids? I know you've got a question coming up on this.
Yeah, well, we normally save the testing because, you know, we're only testing between 500 and 600,000 people a day. Okay. Well, it sounds like a lot, 500,000 people a day. But really think about it. There's 320 million of us. Okay.
Yeah.
So if we tested 500,000 people a day, it would take 2 years to test everybody. So, we're testing the highest risk.
Yeah. It's virtually impossible to isolate from those toddlers. And
yes,
I held them on my lap on Father's Day, and I didn't catch it from them. So,
no.
Oh, well.
And most kids will not get sick. Most children have enough of an immune response that they just crush the virus. Very little risk for most of the kids.
Very good. And what about him retesting? He wants to get retested before he actually starts going back out.
I'm all in favor of it. He's just got to talk somebody into doing it. So.
And with that in mind, Eileen, good call. Some good questions, too. Thank you. Now, that opens up. We have 3 lines available. If you've got a question for Dr. Mixon, we've got a half hour to go. Call us at 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. And when we come back, we'll be talking to Mark in Seattle. He's got a question about the virus and children. And then let's make sure you're next right after Mark. Call us at 800-465-8770. Hey, you just heard me talking about Dr. Michael Gilbert. Well, he's going to be calling in here in about 10, 11 minutes, around 9:45. And so if you have a question that's just really bugging you and you really need an answer, you call right away, 800-465-8770. Dr. Michael Gilbert from Northwest Vision Institute. Right now, let's go to Seattle and talk to Mark. Mark, welcome to the show.
Hello, Mark.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning. How can we help?
My question is about children. I read an article. They were talking about fibrosis and long-term effects with children. I wonder if you can, you know, when I read things, it seems like oftentimes they present the worst-case scenarios. Mm-hmm. I'm just wondering if you can speak on, you know, that. Are there long-term effects to children, you know, normal, healthy children? My daughter's 12. I don't really have a whole lot of fears. And then also, can you talk about herd immunity? Is that something, you know, schools want kids to wear masks and have desks 6 feet apart and walk down the hallways one direction? And right. The article I read was that's kind of nonsense for kids. So can you speak at that?
It is. Yeah. We're treating this with children as though it was influenza. Influenza is a lot tougher on children than this virus. This virus is especially destructive for old people. Influenza is much tougher on kids. So, you know, but the politicians are not medical doctors and they do what's politically correct. Let's face it. If you are a politician, you make a decision and one child dies, you're in a lot more doo-doo than if 25, 85-year-olds die. True? I mean, we protect our kids, you know, we more than our great-grandparents. So they are going overboard with protecting the children. The vast majority of children do not have a surplus of the receptors in their lungs that this virus bonds to. Those receptors tend to build with age. And it's really kind of interesting. The kids have robust immune systems. They crush this virus quickly. Very small numbers of the kids will develop chronic inflammatory diseases from this virus. But that's not unique to this virus. Viruses in general, the flu, Epstein-Barr virus, many of the viruses that are very common that we get exposed to can cause a chronic multi-system inflammatory process in children. We call it Kawasaki disease or Kawasaki syndrome. This was actually found in the late 1960s by a Dr. Kawasaki, as you might expect. And it's in which the kid gets a chronic inflammatory process that damages their heart, their kidneys, their lungs. They get fibrosis. They get dysfunction. And it can be fatal for children. But that's not unique to this virus. That's just something that once in a while you get a child that is susceptible, and almost any viral infection will kick it off. So we're paying a lot of attention to the kids with the coronavirus right now. So we are seeing some. You know, New York had a great big whoop-de-doo. They said, nine children in New York with this disease, two of whom died. Well, it turned out that of the nine children with the syndrome, four were positive for the virus. Five were not positive for this virus. It was other viruses that triggered their syndrome. Still, four out of nine is a predominance. But that's because there was an enormous influx of this virus going through the community. So, you know, that's just a hazard of children and viruses, period. Reality. The biggest danger from the children is that a kid will have the virus, will not be symptoms, will take it home to mom and mom and dad might catch it and then pass it on to grandma and grandpa. The kid is in virtually no danger. Mom and dad that are in their 20s and 30s and 40s are in very, very little danger. It's grandpa and grandma that are in danger. Okay, so yes, the child might bring it home, and then it might go from their home to the next home. But that's really the big reason for separating the kids. You're not trying to protect the kids. They're not going to get sick. The odds, if you're under 50, the odds of dying from this virus are 1 in 10,000. 1 in 10,000.
In other words, of 10,000 people
who got the virus, one will die.
Oh, my. That's okay. Good news.
Yeah. Now, if you're in your 50s up to about 65, your risk is about 1 in 400. If you are in your 70s, your risk is about 1 in 16. If you're in your 80s, your risk is about 1 in 8. So, you know, the older you are, the higher chance that you're obese, that you're diabetic, that you have kidney failure, that you have heart failure. And if you have those conditions, you're at higher risk of dying. It's not even the age per se. It's the comorbid conditions that go with aging that put us at high risk. So
there you go.
I hope somewhere in that wandering I answered your question. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
You're welcome, sir.
Thank you. Thank you, Mark. Let us go to Issaquah and talk with Valerie. Valerie, welcome to the show.
Hello, Valerie.
Thank you. I've got a general question regarding multiple myeloma. I really don't want to drag your poor audience. This is sort of very, very complex thing, which all the research, I'm just confused as heck. Bottom line is, I went in February for a very severe allergic reaction. They ran these tests, said, we don't think there's going to be a problem, and a problem did appear. My Camdefree light chains came out twice normal.
Oops.
And it continued. Okay. Yeah, whoops. Right. Whoops is right. My timing was absolutely lousy. 4th week of February. So you can full imagine it's taken 6 months. I still am not being allowed to see a hematologist because of the fact there was such a, you know, they cut down the number of people allowed in clinics, et cetera, et cetera. So, here I sit. I'm still 6 weeks out from the visit and obviously horribly concerned. And is there anything that I can be doing to bolster my system, maybe shift the odds slightly in my behalf to be prepared to deal with this?
Yeah, the same things that we tell every cancer patient, okay? You need to be exercising. You need to be moving. Working muscle kills cancer. Decreases inflammation, decreases pain perception. You know, I don't have the numbers for multiple myeloma specifically, but let me give you some for the most common women's cancer, which is breast cancer. Women with breast cancer who take up exercise, even after they get the cancer diagnosis, 25% better survival. 25% better survival if a woman simply exercises with her breast cancer. That's amazing. Okay. So, yeah, so exercise makes a difference. I get the same sort of numbers with prostate cancer. Men who exercise survive their prostate cancer. Women survive their breast cancer. I don't have numbers for multiple myeloma. I haven't seen a study on exercise in that particular condition. But as a general rule, the more muscle you've got and the more frequently and intensely that muscle is worked, the better cancer patients tend to do. So that's number one.
Fabulous.
Okay. Number two.
Well, I've had a bit of a challenge there. I've got a cast on my leg. So I've been doing this one-legged on a scooter.
All right. But listen, working one leg is better than working no legs. You know? And yeah, and do sit-ups. Do, you know, lady push-ups. Do rowing. Do anything you can do to work muscles. The more muscles you work, the better off you are. Okay. The other thing is,
I got lose.
Okay. Lose excess body fat. Just as muscle is pro-survival, muscle is pro-growth, muscle is anti-cancer, fat is just the opposite. Fat is producing products that increase your risk of inflammation. They increase your risk of brain cells dying. They increase your risk of kidneys going bad. They promote the growth of cancer. The fatter you are, the higher the risk of dying. The more active you are, the lower the risk of dying.
Okay.
So people hear me talk about fat and exercise, and they think that, you know, I want everybody to have a bikini body. No. I want people to be healthy. And fat versus muscle are the primary determinants of survival.
So there you go. Thank you, Valerie. We've got to go. We've got to go, I'm afraid. We've got a break coming up. But I'm happy to tell you I've got Dr. Michael Gilbert is going to be our guest. We actually have a call from Lee from Monroe has a question about glaucoma.
We still haven't gotten to the senescent cells, but I think we're going to end up waiting until the next show.
Oh, boy. That's right. We've got another 2 hours starting at 10 to 12 on another station. You want to find us? Go to our website, lmclinic.com. Push the podcast button, top of the page. It'll tell you where we are.
That's right. And we'll try to get senescence in the next show.
That's right. Don't go far. Dr. Michael Gilbert from Northwest Vision Institute is next. Literally during the break, I got an email from Northwest Vision Institute, because I've got an appointment. They're confirming my appointment. And just like everything else they do there, it's such a classy little, see, I'm just filling it out. It's just confirming my appointment at 11:45 with Dr. Michael Gilbert. Are you really, Michael, at Cannon Beach, my favorite stomping ground?
I am at Cannon Beach. I'm trying to do the stomping for you, Pete.
All right. Well, you know, if you put on the right music, stomping and jumping gets a lot easier.
So. It's one of my great joys. I put on some tunes and go for a run at least once a day on the beach. It's a wonderful place to refresh and recharge.
Hey, listen, I wasn't planning on this, but can we take a call from one of our callers, because they've called in and it's a good time. Let's just start off there. Let's go to Monroe and talk to Lee. Lee, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Lee.
Hi, thank you. I have a question regarding my mother who came down with glaucoma a couple of years ago. Now, she had been seeing an eye doctor and getting tested for that every year. She's 94. And all of a sudden, it just came on, and now she's almost totally blind. I know a lot of other people that have that, and they never go through that. Why was it? Because they didn't catch it in time? Or why did it just happen like that? And it made her go blind, but other people just do drops.
Lee, that's very difficult, very complex for me to be certain without actually seeing your mother. I agree with you. For the vast, vast majority, over 90% of patients who actually have glaucoma, the diagnosis is usually picked up when it's subtle. It is a very slowly, silently, which is to say painless and no vision changes, but silently progressive condition, which is why it's hard to detect. But it doesn't progress rapidly. There's a rare form of glaucoma called angle closure, and in a 94-year-old, it certainly can be caused by untreated cataracts. A cataract can get so large that it closes off the drainage ducts or drainage meshwork from the eye, causing the pressure to suddenly go up to very high levels, which can permanently destroy the vision. But for that to happen suddenly in both eyes would be a little hard to believe. It's just too uncommon. So my first thought is that she may have glaucoma and macular degeneration or something else that's attacking her vision, or that actually it has been progressing very slowly and may not have been fully detected early enough.
Okay, yeah, she had cataract surgery in her early 80s, and then 2 years after that, she developed a hole in the back of her eye and had surgery for that, which didn't fix it. So she's only got the glaucoma in one eye, but she's got the hole in the back of her eye in the other eye, which causes her only to have peripheral vision. So it just seems like some, you know, it seems like they weren't catching things or something, or maybe it was just too many issues that, and the glaucoma didn't show up until she was 91. And that's when it suddenly appeared.
Two things about that is, glaucoma, and this is important for you because glaucoma is a hereditary condition. It can show up, which is to say you can have visually significant permanent damage at any age. Every year I get some 40-year-olds who have just a little bit of permanent loss of vision because they weren't being looked at. It was assumed that at 40 you can't get those kind of problems. But it is much more commonly diagnosed, or actually, never mind diagnosed, it's more commonly imposing loss of vision associated with age, which is to say age goes up, or pressure goes up with age. With each decade, the pressure goes up in our eye. So therefore, the ravages of glaucoma are going to be much more likely to happen in the population in a 90-year-old than 80-year-old. And that's not a linear increase. So it's a rapid increase in the percentages by decade. So that just means we have to look a little harder. It also depends on what technologies are being used to detect it. And so we're pretty aggressive in checking using multiple technologies to make sure that we catch it very, very early. I'd be glad to take a look to see. You know, one thing that just for the listening audience, when you say mom has a hole in her eye, that's almost certainly a hole in the macula, which is just a tiny fraction of the thickness of the whole eyeball. It's not a structural defect in the eye. It's just damage, not unlike the loss of vision that you would have from macular degeneration. The difference is that a macular hole can often be surgically repaired now. But just because you can surgically put it back together, much like Humpty Dumpty, you're not sure if it's going to work or not.
Is
this the type of thing, Michael, that she should bring her mother in to see you, or what do you recommend?
I'd be delighted to give a second opinion. At least we could try and figure out why she's blind in the glaucoma eye. That should be slowly progressive, not suddenly.
Yeah, well, she's been seeing and getting shots for 2 years, and now they just only see her once in a while, and she ended up from the shots getting an infection in that eye, and we thought that she was going to lose the whole eye for a while, but the infection did clear up. But she is legally blind. She can't hardly at all, and the thing that happened with this is now she's got the signs of dementia. So,
Lee, I think you've helped again just by what you told me, because you remember I said a few minutes ago it is unlikely at her age after cataract surgery that she would have a sudden loss of vision from glaucoma. But what you just told me about her getting shots, the one condition, the number one vast majority of patients, diagnosis that lead to getting shots that are helpful to the eye is macular degeneration. So most likely the loss of vision was from her macular degeneration, much more so than her glaucoma.
Okay, yeah.
And it's certainly true that you can have more than one condition. You know, the devil's aspect of that combination is macular degeneration goes after the central vision. while glaucoma typically starts with the peripheral vision. So both of those diseases can be managed and need to be managed aggressively to maintain vision, but they're working at, they're working against you, against the entire range of vision, peripheral and central.
Yeah, that makes sense. But then I was told that the shots were for the pressure or swelling of the eye. Is that what macular degeneration does? Does the eye does it cause that kind of pressure that would require shots?
Most likely not. The shots would be for the macular degeneration. Sometimes when you give those shots, pressure can elevate, so it is possible for a controllable form of glaucoma. The injections for macular degeneration may be part of that, but typically they're quite separate diseases.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that makes me aware that I need to really get aggressive about my eye care, so I'm going to make an appointment at your office.
I'd that's be delighted to see you. I think with that, your history, with your family history, that's going to be critical.
And with that, I just have to go, Valerie. That's the end of our show. And Michael Gilbert with Northwest Vision Institute, thank you. Thank you. Enjoy Cannon Beach. I'm so jealous.
Thank you, sir.
I am so jealous. If you want more information or to schedule your own appointment at Northwest Vision Institute with Dr. Michael Gilbert, call their office, for goodness sakes. 425-450-2020. 425-450-2020. Do it. Do it. And if you want one of our free health analysis appointments, we've got about 12 or 13 in each of our three clinics, Tacoma, Linwood, Kirkland. Two free tests and still $100 of free longevity supplements. Make your appointment at lmclinic.com. lmclinic.com. When you go to our website, by the way, push the podcast button at the top of the page, and it'll show you where we are for the next 2 hours. Have a great 4th of July.